Tuesday night's games, man. That was a podcaster's dream. So much stuff going on. We had a call-up that's pretty big. We've got the Thames watch. We got a Felix Hernandez injury. But Scott White, Chris Towers, tell me, in your opinion, the single most important fantasy baseball thing that happened yesterday was what?
Oh, it was Bellinger. It was Bellinger. That's one of the bigger things we've seen this season. You know, compared to last year, by this point, we had already seen a lot of high-profile prospect call-ups, and we'd been lacking them to this point. And then the Dodgers surprisingly call up Cody Bellinger, who, you know, I have my concerns. It's too early. He's 21 years old. He had great numbers at AAA, but was striking out one every three at-bats. In spring training, he hit about 200. So there's reason to wonder if it's too early. But at the same time, among minor league hitters, you know, short of like Yoan Moncada, I'm not sure we're going to see a more exciting call up this year than Bellinger.
Scott, I did want to ask you about Bellinger.
Mm-hmm.
MLB.com's pipeline did not have him ranked prior to the 2016 season in their top 100. Baseball Prospectus did not have him in their top 100. Baseball America had him 54. This year, Baseball America jumped him all the way to number 7, and he's top 25 in each of the other two. What changed?
Well, he had a really big year.
He had a really good year, but his numbers in 2016 are nearly identical to his numbers in 2015.
I think part of it's just as players get closer, you know, it's there's so many talented teenagers in the minors that it's hard to distinguish between them. Bellinger, as he moved up the ladder, he's gotten better. You know, it's actually interesting because I pointed out the strikeout rate. It's too high. It's higher than we want to see it. For sure, but
it's not Joey Gallo high.
Yeah, and last year at Double A, after his strikeout rate initially spiked with a big power surge in Single A, he made adjustments. He actually struck out less than 100 times last year. So he's a guy who's shown the ability to make adjustments in you know the 20 to 80 scale that scouts use. Baseball America gives him a 70 power grade, which is very rare. I mean, that's the expectation is 30 home runs a year in his prime with a rating like that. He has a 30 homer season in the minors, which we don't see too many of those. And yeah, it was just off to a ridiculous start at AAA apart from the strikeouts. So this is exciting. I mean, if it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's just overmatched and strikes out too much and is in AAA 2 weeks from now. But if he ends up making the kind of impact Gary Sanchez did last year, like, I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility either.
All right, so you got to get him. And Bellinger, I actually didn't see what his ownership percentage is. I was lucky enough to pick him up 2 days ago, you know, on a hunch. And
yeah.
And
we both said, no, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I got lucky. But we'll see.
41% owned right now.
41%? Yeah. Okay.
41% owned, but I went through my leagues. You know, I'm in 15 leagues. There was only one I could pick him up in. He was already owned, and he was either already owned in the others or the others waivers is just a once a week thing. So there was no reason to put in a claim in him last night. So
yeah,
I was surprised by that.
What I struggle with is like the shallower leagues, like the 21 man roster leagues where you've got a guy, like I've got a guy like Michael Franco on my bench, and I wouldn't drop Franco for Bellinger. But sometimes with these prospects that get called up, I say, you know, that's a five outfielder league type thing, or that's a corner infield, middle infield type league where I'm going to pick him up. And then they end up being really good. Like, I don't even know that I was excited to pick up Trey Turner. I can't remember, but I don't know that I even was going to pick up Trey Turner last year, and Turner ended up being obviously relevant in all leagues. So it's the deeper leagues, it's easy. You take a shot on a guy like Bellinger, no question. The shallower leagues, you know, it's a little bit more.
Were some instances, people on Twitter, you know, my flat advice is, yes, you need to pick up Bellinger, and people were suggesting who the lowest player on their roster was, like somebody said Yasiel Puig. And like, no, you know, I don't think you can do that. Somebody said Michael Conforto. It's kind of a toss-up for me. I think I might actually lean Conforto. But the idea is, even in those shallower leagues with 21-man rosters, you know, if you've been aggressive on the waiver wire early, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. Okay, maybe you don't, but somebody in that league does. Somebody in your league needs to be picking up Cody Bellinger. So, you know, if he's still available in your league, then somebody's messed up.
Okay. I'm sorry, I may have missed it. Did you mention that he might get sent down when Peterson's back?
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't perform, there's a chance of that. If he does perform, though, I mean, it's not like Andrew Toles had locked down the left field job before this call-up. So it's, it's completely dependent on Bellinger, I feel like.
Okay.
It's not like, you know, they need to be tied to Adrian Gonzalez either. This is a guy who's a natural first baseman as well.
Sure.
Okay, let's wrap up Bellinger with this question from Kevin. How much fab should we be spending on Bellinger?
A question that's difficult to answer absent any other context.
What percent?
I would...
I'm going to say 15.
Okay. I was going to kind of take 10 as a middle ground. I mean, in some leagues, depending on the depth and everything, it could be 50%, you know? But right. I think 15 is a nice, safe middle ground for one size, if I have to give a one-size-fits-all number.
Chris Towers, what was the single most important thing that happened in fantasy baseball yesterday? We had a cycle. That happened.
Yeah, Trey Turner starting to turn things around seems pretty exciting.
He's a Turner.
There were so many rainouts last night, and it really cost me. I lost a couple of two-start pitchers this week as a result of it.
Same. Robert Gzelman was a two-start pitcher for me in three weeks.
Gzelman looks like he's going to get skipped in the rotation.
He is.
He should still make a start this week on Sunday, but it's against the Nationals. So.
And it kind of tells you, Scott, you were saying this in the office yesterday. Yeah. It kind of tells you that the Mets might view him as a true number five starter and not someone that they – you know, necessarily need to have on the mound.
Right, not somebody they're prioritizing. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to skip Wheeler if they were going to skip anybody? I would think so.
Yeah, it was disappointing. All right, well, let's go through everything that happened yesterday that's really important. So we'll talk about Michael Brantley. Obviously, Thames, can you drop Felix Hernandez? Dallas Keuchel throws another complete game. He's got a 1.22 ERA, and he's not even the number one starting pitcher in fantasy. Can you guess who it is? Think about it out there. Let's talk about a different promotion, though. Other than Cody Bellinger, a few days ago, Kenneth Vargas was called up, and he's 3-for-9 with a home run that he hit yesterday, 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. Is there any interest in Kenneth Vargas, who is 4% owned?
Isn't it Kenny Vargas?
I can't remember. I think you might be right.
It's not often I get to correct you on pronunciation, so I like to take advantage whenever I can. He started 2 games in a row. So, I mean, Robbie Grossman's been so good that I feel like he'd have to take an outfield spot away from somebody. And I'm trying to think of the Twins outfield right now. I can't imagine.
Kepler, Buxton.
Okay, Kepler and Buxton are probably still in. Who's in the other spot? Is it Rosario?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm pronouncing names wrong. I can't get the Twins depth chart right.
in any case, I mean, Vargas had some low-end sleeper appeal before he didn't secure the DH job this spring.
He's definitely got pop.
Yeah.
It's just a question of whether he can make the kind of adjustments that someone like Miguel Sano has made this season. He's not nearly as talented as Miguel Sano, but, you know, there's a chance that he could settle in as a 25 to 30 homer guy. If he gets an everyday job, Rosario has been playing a lot of left field for them.
Yeah.
Long story short, he's not a Vargas. That isn't somebody I'm racing out to add, except in like AL only leagues.
All right, let me read a couple of emails that I think could be useful for fantasy owners. This one's from Joshua. Dear Marty, Doc, Einstein, and Jennifer.
I have no idea.
Yeah, everybody should know that. Anyone?
Rick and Morty.
Anyone worried about Chris Bryant? I'm just going to stop reading the rest of the email there. Is anybody worried about Chris Bryant? He's batting .259 with 2 homers.
In the email, he said that he's got a high strikeout rate, and so I went to look at it because I hadn't really picked up on that. I thought maybe there was something I was missing. There's not. His strikeout rate's identical to what it was last season, which is, I think, a positive sign, because I thought there was some definite room for strikeout regression with him. I thought maybe he would come back to like the 26% range, and the fact that he hasn't makes me positive. Now, his batted ball indicators are bad. His hard hit rate is down. His average exit velocity is down. Those are bad signs, but I can't bring myself to be concerned about the guy who won the MVP last year.
He's going
to
destroy things soon. He's got four steals, Chris Bryant, too. So just be patient. I know I got a lot of Chris Bryant, and I'm off to a slow start in my Chris Bryant league. So just be patient. But not only are the strikeouts the same, the walks are actually a little bit up this year, and the steals. So that's good stuff.
He's got more stolen on base opportunities.
Email of the day number two is from Chris from Nashville. I know Eric Thames has gotten a lot of love for his hot start, but what do you guys think about Michael Brantley? Can Michael Brantley be a top fantasy producer again? Where does he rate on your stud meter? But we actually would call it a stud-o-meter, Chris.
What's weird about Michael Brantley is he's been really good so far, but not in Michael Brantley ways.
Right.
Well, he's not in... He doesn't have the contact rate we're used to seeing from him. But that being said, he's on pace for 120 strikeouts, which would be a fine number for most players. Not a guy we're used to seeing half that from.
Yeah, 22% strikeout rate is Chris Bryant number. He doesn't have Chris Bryant's power.
Yeah.
His swing strike rate is only 7%, but that's double what it was at his peak. So he doesn't look like the same guy, and... You know, I don't expect him to be that guy right now, based on what we've seen.
I kind of just attribute it to rust. I mean, he was away for so long, and the fact that, you know, he's also on like a 30-30 pace. You know, I'm starting Brantley everywhere I own him. And I'm just happy I drafted him. That's kind of the attitude I'm taking with him right now, because a lot of people didn't have faith he'd even be able to do this.
Well, okay, who would you rather own rest of season, Michael Brantley or Gregory Polanco?
I'll say Brantley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, interesting. Brantley, got to put him over Jose Bautista at this point.
Yeah.
Brantley or Ian Desmond? Kind of similar players. Except Brantley's going to have a better. Well, I don't know. He probably would have a better batting average.
Brantley at this point.
Yeah, I think I would take Brantley too. There's still some hurdles for Desmond to clear.
And there's just no guarantee that Ian Desmond comes back from a hand injury and is perfectly fine.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like he could hit some snags. Like we think we have a pretty clear idea of his timetable, but there could be some setbacks.
And he could be back healthy and just not hit, which is something that we've seen a lot with guys when they come back from that kind of injury.
Yeah. We're assuming he'll be okay offensively because of where he'll be playing his home games. Before that signing happened, we were not thinking he would be okay as a hitter. So, you know, it may not be it may not be a cure-all for what ails him.
Sure. Now, look, Scott, I'm actually really happy for you. You sound good today. You sound fun. You sound into the podcast. I know it wasn't, the Haniger thing yesterday. I learned about the Haniger injury by going on Twitter. I was out for most of the night, had an event to go to, and not as fancy as it sounds, but I come back, I see a tweet, says Haniger, and from Scott White, and I think, what happened here? So Haniger's got the oblique injury. We're going to wait and see. It's never a good thing, but sometimes oblique injuries are like a few days and people are fine.
This doesn't sound like a few day one.
Yeah, well,
I mean, his season's not over either, so
it's over. Drop Mitch Haniger. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
You know, I'm expecting like a 4 to 6 week timetable, which is, you know, it's a bad blow. I mean, even knowing Haniger was no more than a late round pick, he's been the best player on my team in a lot of leagues. So it's, you know, and I got all the tweets, a bunch of
Scott,
meme,
let's
the sad puppy dog eyes, the Doctor Who in the rain meme. Like I got a lot of those in my Twitter timeline last night. And
is
it
that
was
from Doctor Who?
I think it's Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
I believe that is
the fella from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Let's wait and get upset about it when we find out that he's on the DL. But for now, we're going to wait and see on Mitch Haniger. Tough blow.
He's going on the DL.
All right.
What did you hear optimistic about this?
He had an oblique injury. He had an oblique injury. He left the game. He's not on the DL yet. I mean, who knows? Let's just wait and see. I'm not optimistic. I'm sure he's going to go on the DL, but we can
wait and see. But it, it
Like, yeah, I feel like this is one of those injuries where you don't, there's no reason for that kind of optimism.
Oh gosh, poor Scott White. Now you just brought the show down with the hating, with being upset about Mitch Haniger. You already put him on the DL. He's not there yet. You're not the GM. Just be optimistic. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. All right. Hey, listen, Chris, I understand, that you are kind of a watch guy. You like watches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, you, I like a watch.
And we've got our movement watches. But you have like a history with watches, right?
Yeah. Actually, when I was back in college, I worked for a watch company. I made some watch investments. I own some watches. Yeah.
And the movement watches, even though they don't cost that much, they're pretty freaking nice, aren't they?
No, I'm a big fan of mine. I've got the, I've got one of the ones with the big white face, leather strap, you know, genuine leather. It's a really nice watch. It's classy and understated. And that's what I like with my watch. I don't want a big gaudy watch that,
right,
that makes everyone look at me. I want something that looks good. It's classy. And that's what my movement watch is.
Right. And in movement watches, it's spelled MVMT. MVMT. So here's the URL for you. In addition to getting this awesome watch at a great price, that, you know, they're unbelievably inexpensive compared to other watches you'd see. You can get 15% off and free shipping if you want yourself a watch. So, look, you got a gift to buy or you just want a watch, go to mvmtwatches.com/fbaseball. mvmtwatches.com/fbaseball. That's M as in Mary both times, by the way. mvmtwatches.com/fbaseball. Go to the website. The hardest part about going to the website is picking which one you want. There were like 10 that I absolutely loved. High quality watches, revolutionary prices, and this is the world's fastest growing watch company. So 15% off, free shipping, and free returns if you don't like it, which you will. But this is a great deal. mvmtwatches.com/fbaseball. Join the movement. All right, your news for the day. Felix Hernandez had shoulder stiffness and a dead arm. He gave up 4 runs on 6 hits in 2 innings. Felix Hernandez has given up 39 hits in 26 and two-thirds innings. Not a lot of walks, but a lot of hits. So it was a tough night for the Mariners.
I could have told you he had a dead arm, Adam.
Oh! Well, you're the injury man. Anyway, people want to know what they should do with Felix Hernandez. Drop, hold, what do you think?
I mean, he's probably going on the DL too. It's a 10-day DL. Why would
you? You're right. Now you're right about both. You're right about both.
He missed one start.
So, you know, presumably you can put him in a DL spot. If, like, you're just overrun with DL players, though, which is understandable the way this season started out, like, he's been pretty bad. And there were reasons to suspect he was not going to be able
to turn
him? The round after his terrible season last year.
You dropping him? You got the guts to say it? You dropping Felix Hernandez?
I don't think it's a crazy idea.
It's worth pointing out, like, his terrible season last year was not drop worthy.
Oh, it was.
I disagree.
You weren't starting Felix Hernandez.
Were you dropping Dallas Keuchel last year?
You could have. You weren't dropping him because he had won the Cy Young. You know, like, you know, you probably should have dropped him based on his production. You weren't dropping him because you can't, oh, he's going to turn
well,
it around.
No, Keuchel, I mean,
Dallas ERA was like a full run higher than Felix.
He had a very strong finish, Keuchel did. So, you know, somebody was benefiting from him toward the end of that season.
Last season?
Yeah.
Didn't he go on the DL?
Toward the end of the season where he was healthy. Like, the last couple months for Dallas Keuchel were good, is what I'm saying. So, okay. You know.
But like his ERA was a full run higher than Felix Hernandez.
All right, so I'm just going to speed this up because I want to get to the other stuff.
Felix
Hernandez
was bad last year. I don't care. Just if cherry picking ERA makes it look better to you, fine. But it was bad.
All right, it doesn't matter. You don't have to drop him. But I guess it's justifiable in a 10-team league, especially. Madison Bumgarner won't need shoulder surgery. He's likely going to be out about 2 months. Jose Altuve was in a collision with Teoscar Hernandez. Altuve seems okay. He's day-to-day with a shoulder injury. Hernandez, leg contusion. And that was late in the game. George Springer did come in and replaced Hernandez, but Springer was sitting that game. So maybe he'll play today. Kendall Graveman's going to come off the DL tomorrow, returning from a shoulder injury. David Price set to face hitters for the first time. Zach Britton could be back this weekend. The Pirate. Oh, let me ask you. Do you guys just expect Zach Britton to come back and be Zach Britton?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he's healthy enough to pitch, I would expect so, but it'll definitely be something to keep an eye on.
I got a trade offer, Zach Britton for Dylan Bundy. And Britton has a 1.86 whip this year, and then he went on the DL. So he's given up 10 hits, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts in 7 innings. Just was pitching out of jams. So I don't know. Like, I kind of want to take the deal.
What is the injury for Britton again?
I think it was an elbow injury.
It seemed like one of those situations where maybe the struggles clued them into the injury, because I know I was seeing Zach Britton's line and thinking, wonder if everything's okay there. And then lo and behold, he winds up on the DL. But the flip side of that is they wouldn't bring him back if it doesn't appear to be solved, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really thinking about that one. But all right, I wanted to know if we thought that Zach Britton was still, you know, one of the best relievers in baseball, and I guess we're optimistic. It's been a fairly short DL stint. I think he's eligible to come off today, and they're talking about Sunday for Britton. More news and notes for you. The Pirates lead baseball in errors. Their defense is terrible. We'll talk about Gerrit Cole, who actually had a great start yesterday against the Cubs. Aaron Nola, I did not mention this yesterday, he's on the DL with a lower back strain, but Nola's expected to only miss one or two starts. Seattle third baseman Kyle Swagger sat with hip soreness. That is an awesome autocorrect, Kyle Seager, Kyle Swagger. And Chris, are you excited about Jeb Bush and Derek Jeter potentially owning the Miami Marlins?
Sure. Yeah, the most popular player in baseball.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Still.
You've got two of the most popular Yankees in baseball history in Mattingly and Jeter, potentially.
Okay. I thought you were talking about Jeb Bush.
No.
Did you see on Twitter, I found a picture from the Miami Herald of Jeb Bush and Billy the Marlin eating paella? It's from the late 90s, and Jeb Bush is wearing a 6-foot-long ascot around his neck. It's a fantastic picture.
That does sound great. Now, here's your stat of the day. Mike Trout hit his first extra inning home run of his career.
Finally clutch.
Yeah, that's weird, right? Yeah, he's so overrated. And your trivia MVP. question of the day. Which fictional character did Chris Coughlin imitate perfectly last night?
Willie Mays Hayes.
That's right.
Now, I saw...
But,
I
like, the limited fake Willie Mays Hayes, the Omar Epps version.
Omar Epps, Major League 2.
From Major League 2?
Yeah.
Now, I saw the gifs of Willie Mays Hayes. Doesn't it look like Willie Mays Hayes was out?
No. No, he went right over him.
I think the catcher's glove grazes his, lower leg.
They didn't have replay review at the time, Scott.
Yeah, apparently not.
Negative Nancy Scott White. Now he's calling Willie Mays Hayes out. All right, anyway, that was an amazing play by Chris Coughlin. You should look it up.
It was.
let's get into some big-time performances. Dallas Keuchel, complete game, and 2 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. He has a 1.22 ERA. He's the number 2 starting pitcher in fantasy. Keuchel has 27 strikeouts in 37 innings. That's 7.1 per 9. That is not very good. In 2014, so this is what I'm struggling with. Is Keuchel a sell high? In 2014, he had a 2.93 ERA and a 1.175 whip, and he went 12-9. I think the record's going to be better than that this year. But that made him the number 26 starting pitcher in points leagues and number 33 in Roto with a 2.93 ERA, because Keuchel had 6.6 strikeouts per 9 in exactly 200 innings. Then the following year, 8.4 strikeouts per 9, and I don't think we expect him to do that. And that was in 232 innings. He won the Cy Young. He was the number 4 starting pitcher in points, number 5 in Roto. So, I look at 2014, and I see 200 innings, 6.6 strikeouts per 9, sub-3 ERA, wasn't even a top 24 starting pitcher in fantasy. I expect the win-loss record to be better, though, 12-9. I think it'll be better than that. Personally, I buy into Keuchel. I don't know how much you guys do, but I think the ERA is going to be better than 2.93. I think he's going to have a special year.
Yeah.
And I expect, 7-ish strikeouts per 9, not 6.6, and probably more than 200 innings. So what I'm saying but I don't know if with a 7.2 strikeout per 9, he might be the 15th best pitcher.
Can I ask, why do you expect a special season from him?
Because I just think he's awesome. I think he did it 2 years ago. He pitched with a shoulder injury last year. I am more or less willing to completely...
But he was a better pitcher then.
How is he better?
It's not like he came out of nowhere with the year he won the Cy Young, though.
Sure, but you're saying you expect a better than 2.93 ERA. You expect a special season.
Well,
but he was a better pitcher in 2015 than he'd ever been before or since.
Like, even if it's just a 2.93 ERA.
Yeah, well, he had a 2.48 ERA in 2015. I don't think it's going to be that good.
I mean, I don't want to get caught up in specific predictions, but it does seem like he's getting the kind of weak contact. Like, Keuchel is a pitcher who there's really no comps for Keuchel, right? I mean, he's a ground ball collecting fiend who, you know, his success is always going to depend on location and movement, not so much missing bats. When most pitchers in baseball, it's how much contact they're giving up.
But what made him special in 2015 was the fact that he did start missing bats. He had an above average strikeout rate.
Right. I just don't know that it's fair to compare Keuchel at any point in his career to the one who won the Cy Young. Like, he can be a special pitcher and still not that pitcher.
So where do you think he is?
I think it's like I'm looking at more as a comparison Keuchel this year versus Keuchel last year. Can he be a frontline pitcher again? And I think he's giving us a pretty resounding yes so far that he can be that. And that's what I expect him to be. That's what I expected him to be anyway. Obviously, I'm more say it with more conviction now. But I like I said earlier, I like the way he finished last year. And I think there were some health issues that related to his early season struggles.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah, I still view him as like a number three starting pitcher.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, you said he was the number 26 pitcher in 2014. I think he's probably the same guy he was in 2014.
All right.
Maybe more games.
That was 200 innings with a 12-9 record. So if he stays healthy, I think he'll eclipse the innings and he'll win. He'll definitely have a better record than 12-9.
Can Johnny Cueto? Like, does that seem like a reasonable comp for Keuchel? Just not in terms of the kind of pitcher he is, but the kind of numbers I'm expecting.
Right.
You know, a lot of innings, low ERA, and probably a lot of wins.
I think, and they have a great bullpen and a great offense. So he's set up for a good season, Keuchel. So, all right, would you rather have Keuchel or Cueto? I know it's easy for Chris, but Scott? Right.
Yeah, I'll still take Cueto.
All right, would you rather have Keuchel or Carrasco?
Carrasco.
I'll take Carrasco.
Okay. Let's do the Thames watch. This is a tweet from Cameron. Can you bring up Eric Thames versus Dominic Brown's big month a few years ago and other strong months from previous players? Are there any Eric Thames comps? I mean, this is ridiculous. He hit his 11th home run last night. He's batting .371 with 14 walks, 18 strikeouts.
It seems like every day I see a Thames stat that impresses me more than the last. Here's today's. Thames, the Thames stat of the day. Ready?
Yes.
On sliders. Sliders. Eric Thames is 5-for-10 with 3 home runs. Sliders! Nobody wants to hit a slider. He's 5-for-10 with 3 home runs. That's amazing.
He has, if you take his RBI and add them to his runs and then subtract home runs so you're not double counting anything. He has accounted for 17% of the runs the Reds pitching staff has allowed this season.
It wasn't even against the Reds yesterday, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I saw comments from Lackey and Schwarber, and so I thought it was against the Cubs.
Is there anything historically that says this may not last? I mean, Dominic Brown is a good example. He had an amazing month.
He had 12 home runs in the month of May, but he also had 21 strikeouts and 0 walks in that month. Heath was actually looking at this. Players who hit at least 11 home runs in the month of April, and it was all pretty much very good players. There was like a Brady Anderson the year he had the 50 homers, the Luis
very
Gonzalez
good player 50, that year,
50 homer year. There were a handful of guys who did not hit 30 home runs that season, and not necessarily because of injury. I think Chase Utley actually had an 11 homer April and finished with like 27 home runs that year. So it's not a guarantee for sure.
It's amazing. It's just amazing what he's doing. And we could spend every show talking about Eric Thames. We won't. I want to talk about a couple other Brewers, though. Hernan Perez is 28% owned. He is now shortstop eligible, so third base, outfield, and shortstop. Craig Counsell wants Perez in the lineup a little bit more. Look, shouldn't they just bench Arcia already and put Hernan Perez is their everyday shortstop. I don't know how he is defensively.
I mean, he's made 3 starts at shortstop now. I don't know how much of a defensive downgrade that is. I don't know. I'd like if they did that because I do think Perez has more utility in fantasy than Arcia does, at least at this stage of their careers. But yeah, second straight game with the home run, also had 2 triples in this. Hernan Perez, you look at the .260 batting average, but he has a .955 OPS. And like, obviously we know he can run too. So if Council is able to live up to his own wishes and play Perez more, he could become fantasy relevant again pretty quickly.
It's just a tough spot for that team because they're not contending this year. It doesn't really matter if they're more competitive this year with Hernan Perez or Orlando Arcia. Hernan Perez is 27. He's been on a couple different teams. He's probably not part of the next competitive, really good Brewers team. Orlando Arcia is supposed to be, you know, one of the building blocks for this
team.
He's
supposed to be, yeah.
It's hard to...
I know they've kind of initiated this rebuilding plan, but man, seeing the kind of player Thames looks like he is and the kind of year Travis Shaw is having...
They're still only 500, though.
I know, but...
Yeah. They're not going to stop competing until they're, you know, they're not going to stop. I think there's a chance for Perez to play at least in the short term a lot. And he's 28% owned. Would you rather own Christian Arroyo or Hernan Perez?
Perez.
Yeah, I agree, Perez.
Yeah, and Brandon Crawford might end up on the DL. So if you're a Crawford owner, you need a shortstop, you take a look at Perez. Also, if you're a Crawford owner, you need a shortstop, Didi Gregorius could be back on Friday. So he's. Would you rather own Hernan Perez or Didi Gregorius?
Probably. Well, I mean, in the context you're talking about where I'm slotting him in my lineup right away, like I don't know that I can go there with Perez. I'd rather have him on my bench. So, Gregorius, I think I'd say Gregorius.
Keon Broxton, Chris, 58% owned in his last 5 games. He's 5-for-16 with a triple, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, and 3 steals, including 2 last night. Are you seeing enough from Keon Broxton to keep him on your roster, or do you think Broxton is someone who's expendable for maybe a Bellinger or something?
Yeah, I'd rather have Bellinger than Broxton. I'm just not sure where he's going to play, not sure how good he is.
Let's go to a segment called Finally! Trey Turner, he hit for the cycle. About time you hit for the cycle, Trey Turner. We've been waiting. He had 7 RBIs and 4 runs. But seriously, he had been pretty bad. He was batting .219 before yesterday. Now he's batting .289. In 5 games since coming off the DL, Turner has a hit in all 4 of his starts. He didn't start one of the games. He has 3 doubles, but no walks, 3 strikeouts. On the year, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts in 10 games for Trey Turner and a home run and 3 steals. I don't know. Even with the cycle yesterday, it has not been a good start to the year for Trey Turner. Chris, where are you on Trey?
I haven't changed my opinion on him at all, and yesterday was a good example of why. He's just such a dynamic player, and it's too early. Especially in his season, he's played, what, 11 games? It's way too
10,
early to be concerned.
Yeah. Maybe 11. All right, it was Coors Field yesterday. Like last year, I think Andrew McCutchen had a 3-homer game at Coors Field, and he stunk again after that. And that's Adam picking on Andrew McCutchen. Let's go to Ian Kinsler. Scott, I put Ian Kinsler in the finally section. He went 4-for-5 with a double and 4 runs against Seattle in a 19-9 win. But actually, he wasn't as... I kind of felt like Kinsler wasn't doing anything. He was a little better than I thought. Well, 14 walks, 14 strikeouts on the year, and right now he's the number 8 second baseman in fantasy. 3 homers, 1 steal. And it wasn't as bad as I thought.
Points leagues?
Yeah, both.
Oh, in both?
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of slow starting second basemen this year. A lot of slow starting second basemen, a lot of slow starting shortstops.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kinsler, before these last 2 games, he had a 4-for-34 stretch. So I don't think you were wrong in saying he hadn't done much of anything. I think peripherals were saving him in points leagues and just the struggles of the position as a whole. I mean, like, even though it was a slump, my position on Kinsler hasn't really changed. I wasn't looking to bench him in any leagues. I do think he's at an age where you always have to worry if this year's going to be the year he drops off. But, a rough 10-game stretch like that isn't enough to convince me it is.
Is there a second baseman that struggled out of the gate that you guys are actually worried about? Like a Dozier or
VR.
Cano? A VR, okay.
I mean, if he counts as a second base, that's what he's playing for the Brewers. He wasn't. obviously second base eligible coming into the year. But, you know, and those relate back to concerns I had, and some even stronger than me, Heath, about VR. Like, it's not just the season started and my whole opinion of VR has changed. It's just the concerns I had are seeming to be realized with the inconsistent contact that the impact it's having on batting average.
Yeah, like I look at Rougned Odor, he's having a bad season. I'm not really worried about it. I have faith in his bat. I do worry a little bit, and not really a high-end guy, but someone who was going high eventually is Jose Peraza. Like, he's not striking out, but he's also not walking. He's stealing bases, but I just wonder, like, does the bat play? And I think it's a fair question. You know, the BABIP's low, but low BABIP can happen if you're just overmatched.
As far as Dozier and Cano go, you feel pretty confident in them turning things around? Good buy low candidates?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Cano has been a top five second baseman, right?
Well, who do you think the number one second baseman is right now, by the way? A little trivia for you.
Well, I actually just looked at this Monday, I think, so it could have changed since then, but I think Jose Ramirez was at the time. Is he still?
He is in points leagues. He's number two. Ramirez is number two in Roto. Behind anyone? Also,
no
shortstop eligible, I believe. Nope, I'm wrong. Cesar Hernandez.
Oh, yes.
That's been awesome.
338
That's
batting
still
average.
High, though. Yeah. If you can get anything for him. I don't know that... There's another player who I think has crossed that threshold from enjoy it while it lasts because you can't really get anything for him to, okay, now maybe he is a sell high, but we'll get to him soon enough, I'm sure.
Cesar Hernandez?
No. You want to just say it? It's Ervin Santana.
Oh, Ervin Santana. Yeah, sure. Ervin Santana. I will tell you about Ervin Santana after I tell you about SeatGeek and your awesome way to save $20 when you want to go to a baseball game or a concert or theater or comedy, whatever it is. Get the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY. That's promo code FANTASY, all caps, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Look, I got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I use it very frequently. Anytime, not... It's weird. It's like not just to buy tickets, but I just want to know how much tickets are going for. I'll open up the SeatGeek app and I'll take a look. And then sometimes, oh, these are pretty cheap. Maybe I'll go to a game. And if you want to do that, you can save $20 again with our offer code FANTASY. Why is SeatGeek better than all the others? Because it searches multiple ticket sites. That's how you get the best deals. It compares prices. It grades every ticket based on value. SeatGeek immediately helps you identify the best seats that fit your budget. You can sort by price. It's just a very easy app to use and very useful, and it's going to save you time, it's going to save you money, and every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. So, our listeners, you're awesome. You get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase when you use the promo code FANTASY. Download the SeatGeek app, use the promo code FANTASY, $20 off your first purchase. All right, Ervin Santana coming up in a... we'll do it now, why not? Rankings shockers. Number one pitcher in fantasy is Ervin Santana. The number one shortstop in Roto Leagues is Chris Owings. He's number five in points. And and Addison Russell, I was surprised to see, is the number three shortstop in points leagues, number four in Roto. He's actually having a nice little year, and he was a breakout for Scott. Let's talk about Ervin Santana, and then we'll get into those shortstops. I'm going to throw it to Chris Towers. Do you think Ervin Santana's good?
No.
Hey. 23 starts. He's got a 2.03 ERA dating back to last year.
That's fine. He's fine. He's useful. He was decent last year. He's worth owning.
He's decent most years, yeah.
But I don't think this is some new Ervin Santana that we need to go run out and get. I think he's got like a 1.12 BABIP right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's... Like, it's a situation where coming into the year, I felt like Ervin Santana was underrated. So I was happy to pick him up. You know, he had a two-start week the first week. So I think, you know, he saw more action than usual because of that. But now, you know, he's been up over 90% owned, up basically universally owned for a couple weeks now. It's up to five starts where he's kept an ERA below 1.77. So I think just knowing... particularly at starting pitcher where, you know, one bad start can get people panicking and can really skew in categories, leagues, ERA and WHIP numbers in a way that makes you feel like you have a pitching problem than when maybe you don't. And just the fact, you know, Ervin Santana sitting there at the top of the rankings, I think he's entered the point where with this start, he crossed the threshold from, okay, everybody's kind of suspicious of it too. Now maybe you can take advantage of somebody with Ervin Santana, because like this isn't the first time he's done this. Just going back to 2014, his first six starts for Atlanta, actually, he had a 1.99 ERA, and then he finished that year with a 3.95 ERA. 114 games was a fine fantasy option, but there's correction coming, just like there was then.
He's a high threes ERA guy.
Yeah,
and that's how I view. I moved him up in my rankings as you were speaking. To number 73, right behind Ivan Nova.
Ivan Nova. Oh, see, now we all get to correct each other's pronunciation.
Well, me mispronouncing something is not
new. Would you trade Ervin Santana for Jose Quintana?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's fairly realistic, too.
Yeah.
So, all right, how about those shortstops? Addison Russell having a nice year, top four shortstop in both formats. Chris Owings, fifth in points, first in Roto. What do you think, guys?
I think Chris Owings, probably his ownership percentage should keep going up. He's dual eligible. He steals bases.
79%
yeah,
owned.
A lot of that value is based on the five stolen bases and the 16 runs, and the 16 runs especially is just totally unsustainable for a guy that usually doesn't hit at the top of the order.
But there's some pop there, and you know, like I don't think the pace he's currently on, which is 15 homers, 40 steals, like obviously the batting average is going to come down a little, the runs scored are going to come down, but just those two categories, which are the measurements we care about most for a hitter, I would say, like they don't seem crazy, and considering he's shortstop eligible, considering he's actually playing every day, I don't know. I'm intrigued enough. You know, I'd add like a Bellinger over him, but I'm intrigued enough to give Owings a look.
He's stolen around 15 bases per 100 per 500 plate appearances in the majors. I just
well, last year was good though. Owings had 21 steals in 119 games. He has 5 and 6 attempts. He's off to a good start, but four walks, 17 strikeouts, so there's probably a cold stretch coming.
And you know what I say about stolen bases. Like, that's the one stat that doesn't just happen by happenstance, by a player beating himself. It's a player consciously deciding to do something, and he can impact that number.
And we know the Diamondbacks like to steal as well. Pollock stole 2 bases yesterday. I think he's up to 6 now. His numbers look great at the moment. All right, we'll come back. We'll do Addison Russell some other time. Let's talk about some players. By the way, we got Grade the Trade coming up later on in the show. Stock watch here. Are these players' stocks rising, and then are they falling? We'll start with the risers. Is Gerrit Cole's stock rising, as in his last 3 starts, he's given up 4 runs with 3 walks, 21 strikeouts in 19 innings, and that includes 2 starts against the Cubs. Is Gerrit Cole's stock rising? Is Kyle Hendricks' stock rising? And we'll stop here. We'll do half the list here. Actually, we'll do all the pitchers. Cole, Hendricks, Marco Estrada, who is also a great start, 270 ERA and 33 Ks in 30 innings. And Michael Wacha, 255 ERA and about a strikeout per inning and 4 quality starts and 4 starts. Cole, Hendricks, Estrada, and Wacha, are their stocks rising right now?
Well, it was nice to see Kyle Hendricks pull out of the tailspin. His velocity was up about 3 miles per hour yesterday over where it had been in his previous start. It's more in line with where he was in his spring outing, so I guess that's a promising sign.
That sounds like stock rising to me, but he only had like 5 swinging strikes and 3 Ks for what it's worth.
Well, stock rising relative to how it was falling.
I still have, he's turned his stock around, but I still have Gerrit Cole ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. And I might be as the low guy on Gerrit Cole coming in the year. Yeah, I mean, 2 hitting the Cubs with more than a strikeout per inning after another start that was also encouraging, and not really understanding what was wrong with him in the first place, considering how hard he was throwing. It's not like there was diminished velocity or appeared to be diminished stuff. So
he had one bad start to open the season.
Well, I know, but just after last year, it didn't
Right, but no, what I'm saying is
it
like
didn't
he gave up
my concerns.
5 runs against Boston in the opener, which that's fine. You get a mulligan against Boston,
sure.
I think. He's got a 2.52 ERA with a strikeout per inning in 4
yeah.
starts since then.
Yeah,
I'm very optimistic about Gerrit Cole at
right.
this point.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous though because I do think the defense is a major problem. Like he lost yesterday because of an
right,
unearned
but the
run.
The infield defense shouldn't be.
Well,
and
I don't know.
Josh Harrison.
Pitcher. Josh Harrison has been just dreadful. I don't know what that's all about, but you know, he's kicking the ball around. He's making some errors that you don't expect to see.
And this was something that I was listening to Monday's podcast and you brought it up. This was the ground ball heaviest pitching staff in baseball last season. So it is worth noting that the outfield defense should be less of a concern, and they have changed the way they're aligning their outfield.
Okay.
McCutcheon's playing a little more in now, or a little further out. Yeah, further out.
Yeah, he is playing further out, and I saw that over the weekend, and he didn't get to a ball, maybe two, that most people would have. But
right, but you'll trade singles for doubles and triples every time.
You will, but doesn't change the fact that he's a bad defender. But all right, fine. How about Estrada and Waka? Has their stock risen for you since your preseason ideas of Marco Estrada and Michael Waka?
Well, Waka has especially because he just looks like he's back to where he was 2 years ago, which may have been a little overrated in fantasy, but it's still universally owned starter more often than not. He looks like he's going to be a mid-range but reliable option for you. Estrada, was much higher to begin with, and the fact he has more than a strikeout per inning so far, 33 and 30 innings. I don't know that he's really changed the way I view him. I just kind of view that as early season skewing of numbers because he's going to have good strikeout starts sometimes, and he just happened to have a couple here in the early going. But, he's proven the last couple of years he's a quality pitcher.
Yeah.
And
he's unorthodox.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He looked awesome against Boston the previous start to this one.
This is Marco Estrada we're talking about. So, Chris, on Monday's show, Scott asked, would you trade Estrada for Bumgarner? And I said no. I said maybe if I had a 3-0 team. And Heath said, absolutely. You probably heard it because you listened to the show. Would you trade Marco Estrada for Bumgarner?
I have Bumgarner ranked significantly higher, so I would not. I would rather have Bumgarner.
So you would trade Estrada for Bumgarner?
Yes.
Okay. And Scott, where did you fall on that? It depends
on
your team.
Yeah, I think that was me kind of gauging out loud where I should rank Bumgarner. I have him ahead of Estrada. I would trade Estrada for Bumgarner because I feel like Estrada, while he's good, he's not make or break your pitching staff good, And Bumgarner certainly is.
Okay. And others, are there stocks rising? Couple of third basemen. Mike Moustakas hit his 7th home run. And Joey Gallo hit his 7th home run, and he's a top 5 third baseman. I don't know how he's so much higher than Moustakas. And he's got 5 more RBIs and a
the
triple.
RBI.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
And they both have 7 home runs, and Moustakas is batting 50 points higher. Anyway, Moose and Gallo, they keep rising up for you?
I still have big concerns about Gallo. I mean, he's still a bad week, I think, away from getting discussed for a demotion, considering the starting point is a .224 batting average. Moustakas, this might be a chicken and egg thing where, the fact that he already has 7 home runs means he's hitting more fly balls, but he's among the increased fly ball guys in a way that suggests, okay, maybe he can sustain a career high homer pace. And I've always liked how much contact he makes. That rate's actually been a little worse this year, but still above average for a power hitter. So I think Moustakas is somebody who I wouldn't necessarily be looking to sell.
The thing with Moustakas is the breakout might have started last year, and it's just that the injury came in and ruined it because, the homer pace wasn't quite this, but he was hitting the ball a lot harder per hard hit contact rate, and he's sustained those gains so far in the early going.
Okay, would you rather have Moose or Gurriel, who had another good game yesterday?
Moose
or Gallo?
Gallo.
Moose.
Gallo, huh?
Yep. But I'm the buyer on Gallo.
Yeah, you like him. All right.
Gallo and Sano, you're all about the 200 strikeout guys with a lot of power.
Well, the big thing for me with Joey Gallo is he's gotten his strikeouts to a bad but still manageable place. He's gotten his strikeouts to where Miguel Sano has been. And Miguel Sano has been a top 15 third baseman.
I mean, sometimes there have been 200 strikeout guys. They're both on pace for more than 200 strikeouts. There have been ones who have impacted fantasy, but I'll, particularly with the lack of track record, I'll bet against it for both of them.
All right. Well, the thing is with Chris is like he's like Joey Gallo for a long time, and you got to be excited because this is your moment. Like, this is huge.
Well, and there's certainly some confirmation bias in both how I and Scott view him. I would say is that we're both seeing the things we want to see from him.
Right. Right.
When you have a standout 80 grade tool like he does with raw power, it's just he's showing enough skill to play it in games. And guys who have 45, 50 homer potential, you know, they're rare.
By the way, Mitch Haniger expected to miss one game with the oblique injury. You don't believe me, do you?
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious. It was a total joke. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Of course he isn't. Come on.
All right. Look, I want to get to grade the trade and an email, so let me get through some other stuff here. Danny Duffy, terrible start yesterday. Chris, are you concerned? You've written and spoken a lot about Danny Duffy.
Yeah, I mean, this was my concern, that the lower velocity was going to catch up to him eventually, and I just hope it hasn't, because I do own a lot of Danny Duffy. The swinging strike rate is still healthy, although it wasn't very good yesterday.
You know what's funny is he had his best velocity yesterday.
There you go.
Average 94.4, touch 97.
Ooh,
there you go.
That's nice. That's great.
And, like, it's worth noting, too, obviously an awful start to bring him to a 2.81 ERA. And, you know, good ERAs are usually, like, this is the way seasons play out. For good pitchers, series of good starts, really bad start. Like, it's not always just, you know, two earned runs in seven innings, two earned runs in six innings. So, like, I don't know. Like, I can understand if Chris coming in with concerns, that he's kind of confirming them, but.
Well, I can't really figure out how I feel about Danny Duffy so far. Okay. The swing strike rate has been really healthy. He's pitching like he got 4 years older in the offseason with the velocity loss, the fact that he's not throwing his fastball nearly as much, but he's also 28. So he could be just figuring out how to pitch.
Sure.
All right, let's plow through the rest of this and finish with grade the trade. We'll do the rankings, we'll do the stock falling section tomorrow. Speak, Adam. Alex Bregman, Jonathan Lucroy, Kiermaier, Cargo, who homered yesterday.
So he's heating up.
Is he heating up?
Yes. Hit safely in five straight.
All right, stock rising.
Stock rising.
It's the start of something.
Or maybe I'll get Cargo out of the stock falling section. Wade Miley and Patrick Corbin had good starts yesterday. They are 70% and 55% owned, respectively. Corbin has dominated the Padres twice in a row, but now he has a 3.10 ERA. I said Miley had a good start. He actually walked six, but two runs, but eight strikeouts against the team that strikes out more than any in baseball. However, that's 32 Ks in 26 innings. What do you think about Miley and Corbin? Should they be owned in the amount of leagues that they're owned in, 70 and 55%?
Yes. And I could stand to go higher on Corbin. Maybe up to Miley's level at 70. Like, Miley has a one-hitter, a two-hitter, and a four-hitter already, and the strikeout rate has been terrific. He's had a couple starts now where the walks have been, like, scary high. But that's not... Like, it's just... It's like... I don't know. It's like some kind of alien being inhabited Miley's body, because he's not doing anything recognizable. But I'm like, what he's doing is intriguing enough that I want to see it play out for me. And then Corbin just, I mean, I wish he was doing it against somebody other than the Padres, but there's reasons to be high, to be optimistic about him to begin with. And the relief pitcher eligibility, I think, makes him clearly must own in the formats where that matters. Yep.
Is it strange that I think it's reasonable for them to be owned this in the same percentage of league? Because I'm not convinced they're not the same person.
Corbin and Miley.
I just, for some reason, I think they're like the same guy.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would like to see Corbin had 7 walks and 7 strikeouts and 3 starts, and then he faced the Padres. 2 walks, 17 strikeouts. Bullpen, Roberto Ozuna, he's struggling this year. Now, he got a little unlucky yesterday. It was sort of a softly hit infield single that tied the game, but his velocity's down a little bit. Should we be concerned about Roberto Ozuna? And he had the DL stint, and he had low velocity to begin before the DL stint to begin the season, so... You know, I think it's something at least worth looking into here.
Yeah, it's not something that had caught my attention before, so I haven't looked into it much. But if the velocity is still down, did you say it was still down or
yeah,
just wasn't?
It is, well, it is down a little.
Yeah. Yeah, yesterday's stats on Brook Baseball, but
I mean, the biggest problem for Ozuna might just be that the Blue Jays are terrible.
Yeah, right?
It's not helping.
Yeah.
It's not helping, and I guess Grilly, if there's a problem there, but Joe Smith's been a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grilly's had his own issues.
They don't have a great bullpen. It doesn't
seem. No, it might be a little early to think replacements for Ozuna, but there's some concern here for sure.
Yeah.
And Santiago Casilla blew a save, but he made, according to Josh Fegley, a good pitch that a good hitter, Mike Trout, hit for his first extra inning home run. Any interest in these guys? J.C. Ramirez, Ty Block, Jesse Hahn. As pitchers, J.C. Ramirez, Ty Block, Jesse Hahn.
And Jesse Hahn's off to a really good start prior to even this one-hit effort against the Angels. And he was making some changes in spring training after a bad year last year, trying to get back to being more of an extreme ground ball guy. It hadn't really shown up in the results until this start, and yet he had been having a good ERA and beat us anyway. I think of him as a deeper league option, but 19% owned, I mean, it seems like that could stand to go up a little.
All right. I do want to point out that they're getting Graveman back and they're getting Sonny Gray back in a week. So I feel like he might not even have a spot. Manaea,
he
Cotton,
might not.
Triggs.
He might not. There's it's between him and Triggs.
Yeah.
Probably who blinks first. And Triggs wasn't great last time, so we'll see.
Jose Martinez of St. Louis. Do you feel like they might have to get him into the lineup a little bit more? This is for deep leagues, obviously. He's batting .375. He hit his first home run of the season, and Martinez is mostly pinch hit, but Grichuk's been terrible since the first day of the season. He strikes out a ton.
He forced their hand in the spring.
Yeah, he had a great spring, Jose Martinez, and we sort of, you know, he's
like,
old.
He's the reason
matter.
Matt Adams is playing the outfield.
So like what do you think?
They kept Jose Martinez on the roster and had to force Matt Adams into the outfield in order to get his bat on the roster.
Okay,
so it wouldn't shock me if they started, and you know that Cardinals devil magic—they seem to find guys like this every once in a while. NL only.
Okay, yeah, for now. I just want to throw the name out there, give you a little heads up. Now we don't really have time for Grade the Trade, so I'm going to save that for tomorrow. I knew we weren't going to get to everything. We had 3 rainouts yesterday too, and still had a.
We talked too much.
A little bit, you know, but that's okay. We got to help people.
We didn't even mention Eric Thames' fantastic quote.
Oh, I got a lot of blood in me. You can keep testing.
I got a lot of blood and urine in me.
Yeah. He's funny. Like, I saw the interview yesterday. Yeah. Thames is, I like him.
Yeah, he wasn't like mad about it. They were asking him about like the steroid accusations. He seemed to have a pretty good sense about him.
Other notes, Jason Kipnis was robbed of a home run. Dustin Pedroia is going to play tonight. Pablo Sandoval, DL. Rajay Davis, DL, expected to miss 10 days. Cespedes and Darno should be in the lineup tonight. Jairus Familia is officially the Mets closer again. Chris Tillman's nearing a return. Brandon Crawford, groin injury. Arizona called up Zach Godley to replace Shelby Miller. David Peralta sat against a lefty. Julio Urias likely to stay in the Dodgers rotation rest of season, and Matt Cain will not miss a start. And here's the best part of the show. It's an email from, who are you? From Steven in a remote island in the North Atlantic. He says, Chris likes to cite that the NBA is no worse or different today because Michael Jordan used to dominate the league back in the good old days. While that's true, the big difference is players used to try and beat Jordan their whole career. You didn't see Reggie Miller or John Stockton joining the Bulls in the free agent market when they couldn't beat him.
Oh, God, who cares?
The competitive spirit is different in today's NBA, and that makes it worse.
Competitive spirit. Guys want to win. Who cares?
I think it was a little more competitive back then.
The competitive spirit of Magic Johnson, who was drafted onto a team with the best center ever. The competitive spirit of Larry
Drafted.
Bird played with
Drafted.
Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale.
Drafted.
Don't tell me about competitive
Drafted.
Spirit.
It's different. Drafted is different than going
it's
and signing
not.
A free agent and
Robert
whining
Larry
about...
Larry Bird didn't have to leave his team because he was drafted onto a team with three Hall of Famers.
Yeah, all right, fine, but I'm just saying, like, guys...
If the Cavaliers weren't woefully incompetent and had drafted three Hall of Famers next to LeBron James, he never would have left.
Yeah, but then they pull these power plays to get out of their, like what Carmelo Anthony did and Kevin Love. I gotta go play with my buddy, I gotta go play this big market and play with my buddies and be on superstar teams. Like, come on, dude, this stuff is weak. Plus,
why does it bother you that they make decisions about where they want to do their job?
I don't think they're doing anything wrong. They're entitled to it. I just don't really like it. I like when we have more markets that mattered, and there are really only two teams that have a shot at winning the championship.
Like the good old days. In the NBA.
Two teams have a chance to win the championship.
Like the good old days in the NBA when every team had a chance.
No, I think five or six teams had a chance.
Revisionist history, and you know it.
It's not revisionist.
Take your L.
Oh, don't say that to Chris Towers. I hate that. You don't take your L. I hate that. Chris Towers. All right, we're done for today. Back tomorrow. I promise we'll grade some trades. See you then.